Just so we kind of know, and so I have a feel of where you are. I'm a nurse and came to the Navigators the year they purchased Glen Eyrie to be a nurse here at the Glen. It was the year that Lila Trotman was in bed with tuberculosis and met my husband here at Glen Eyrie. Went out to Los Angeles during the time that I was at the Glen to head up the girls' home and worked part-time as a nurse during that time. I worked part-time as a nurse the first year we were married until our son was born, and went back when the children were little for a short time, and then when our youngest was in junior high, went back into nursing full-time. And I've been working, well, started part-time, went into full-time. When my husband left the Navigators to pursue his venture of becoming a full-time wildlife artist, as he puts it, from commercial art to starving art, and have been at, took a head nurse position for a while, and am now outpatient coordinator for the birth center here in town. So that's sort of my background work-wise, and I graduated from the University of Washington in nursing. I have some other working friend backgrounds that I'll tell you about because I think they're very varied. So I'd like to hear about some of your backgrounds. Don and I have three children. The youngest is now 21, about to graduate from Seattle Pacific University. Horrible, isn't it, Audrey? And I have a daughter, 23. I have a son who's 25, has graduated from college, and is working at Lost Valley Ranch. And they're all going through some of the struggles that you and that we're going to discuss this morning, because my daughters want to be wives and mothers, and they're also living in a time when they're being encouraged to pursue careers, and spiritually they're pursuing careers. One of them wants to teach English as a second language and go overseas. She's already been overseas twice, and she's only 21. The other one wants to be a grade school teacher, and Scott hopes to go to a third world country in water treatment or something like that. So these are issues that we not only struggle with on our own behalf, but on the behalf of children, our children, who are growing up in a very different era than we did, and than we are. So tell me about yourself.
I'm Julie Stanley, and we live in Carrollton, Ohio, and we have two children, a three-year-old boy and a one-and-a-half-year-old girl, and I went to undergraduate school at Washington University in St. Louis, and then I went to medical school at the University of Missouri Columbia. Then I did a residency in pediatrics, and I did a residency in internal medicine, and board certified in both. And right now I'm doing, and I did some special emergency room training. Later on, right now I'm working part-time in an emergency room.
Do you know Bob and Carolyn Sparks in Africa?
No.
She's a pediatrician. She did her residency, or her internship at Penrose Hospital the first year he came to the Glen.
This is the first time we've been out here, so I don't really know a lot of the people. I know a few people from Navigators, but not a lot of them.
Well, welcome to Glen Eyrie.
Thank you.
Okay, Paula?
Yeah.
Well, my glasses aren't good. I did read it right, didn't I?
My name is Paula Stockton. I live in Blind Island. I have a two-year-old, well, a son that will be two April 1st, and a daughter that will be five May 11th. I've been married 15 years. I've been a hairdresser for 16, and I've owned my own salon for 10, and worked for 16 years as a hairdresser.
Who was it told me the other day that her husband had just been laid off, and he's one of these, you know, a new president comes in and doesn't like changing things, and he'd suddenly realized he'd worked every year since he was 8 years old, and he's just like, now what do I do? He's about my age.
My name's Jeannie Seabank, and I'm on staff at the Navigators here at Glen Eyrie with the Army Guy, and I'm the director of the Leadership Development Institute. I'm not married. But my boyfriend and I are involved in this conference, and are looking to get engaged this spring. And so trying to plan for the future and get some ideas, and I would work at least until children came along.
Okay.
So.
Where are you originally from, Jean?
Well, really, I've been all over the
military?
No, I went to Wheaton College and got involved with the Navigators there. And then stayed in Illinois for a while, then Wisconsin, and then came. But I was raised in Florida.
I'm Janet Spell. I'm from Orlando, Florida. And I do not work. Well,
you don't work outside the home.
Well, I do work part-time. I work by appointment. I fit breast forms. And so if someone calls the office and they need a fitting, then I set up an appointment. So that's the only time I work. Okay. I was divorced and met my husband. So when he married us, my daughter and I, she was 3. And I had always worked. I was a self-supporter. The ex-husband never supported us, and so, you know, I just figured when I got married that I would continue to work, but this husband didn't want me to work, so I said, okay, so the first year I didn't, and I really rebelled against it because I just felt that, you know, I mean, I enjoyed working, this secretarial type work. And then I met the Lord as my personal Savior, and He just really dealt with me severely about working wives and mothers. And let me know that my responsibility was home and my children needed me and what I wanted had to wait. And that's just really how the Lord let me know. So I gave up my job and started being at home, and I tried to think, how can I, you know, be happy at home and take this role that the Lord had given me? I mean, actually, I had chose it because I had married and I chose to have a job. So I got into all kinds of neat things like fixing my own food, you know, canning my own vegetables, baking my own bread. I mean, I'm really going to be busy here, so I'm not bored. Because the Lord says to do everything unto Him, you know, and to do it well. So I thought, well, I'll feed Him real good, you know. And I really...
And how much weight did you all gain?
But I enjoyed it. And I love being at home. I have never had the desire to go back to work. Well, when my husband decided to open this business, a medical supply business, he wanted me to go to school and find out about breast cancer. And so I felt like, you know, I needed to support him in that. He told me it wouldn't be full-time, but it was something he needed and he wanted me to do it. So I agreed to do it, and that's how I just, you know, by appointments. And I'm happy with that because I still have a son that's a junior in high school. I have a daughter that's married and has a baby. And that's all neat, and I love being there when the little grandbaby, you know, can come over and have you. But when my son graduates next year from high school, I know I'm going to have to go back to work to send him to college. And I guess I won't mind that because I won't have guilt there, you know, because I don't have children there. Because I really do. I feel it's important that moms and women come home from school. And he's not going to be there, and I probably feel a void somewhat in my life when the children aren't there. And I don't know if it'll be part-time, full-time, or what, but unless, of course, the Lord would happen to see fit to get us the money for the son to go to college if I'm going to work. But I'm getting myself prepared. You might have to go back to work.
Okay, you've just sort of summed up everything I'm going to say.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
Sorry.
No. Don't be sorry, because you've brought up a lot of points that I think will really help us all. I mean, we're not here just to hear what I have to say. I think we're here to hear what we all have to say about it. And I really like what you've said, because you've brought up a lot of really crucial issues. And I appreciate that. You didn't steal my thunder. I have no thunder. So don't worry about that. Audrey and I go back about 35 years, so, and we're not even that old.
You knew each other before you were born, right?
Yeah.
First discussion group at my first Navigator conference in 1954. And that was the same year we moved here also. And we have one boy. Our baby is going to be 36 this year.
Yeah, and he's 6'4", too.
But we have been with Navigator. My husband retired last year, 32 years. But as far as the working, I've not worked outside of home to speak of, except the first few years Roy and I were married, and that was secretarial work. But with the Navigators, it's a full-time job.
24 hours a day, so to speak. And we've always, pretty much always had people living in our home. And so that was my part of the ministry, in training girls. That was the way they had training programs in the early days. The homes were the key focus for training. And we've had as many as 6 fellows, 2 girls and a couple at one time.
Right down here in Colorado Springs.
Well, the biggest bunch we had, of course, was in Jacksonville, Florida, but our first assignment, we had that many in San Diego. But it's been a good stretching experience over the years. But I think the thing that I appreciated was being able to do what God had called us to do and still be available to my first responsibility, which was Roy and John, within the framework of the work.
But you didn't have to look at it that way.
No.
I've known of situations like that where the mother was not available, any more available to her husband and her family than if she'd worked outside the home. So that's one of the points that's important.
That's not true, because they were first.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I think one of the things we need to discuss today is there are decisions we all have to make, no matter what our situation is. There are decisions of priority.
I think, too, I didn't realize my responsibility, you know, until I started doing Bible studies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've been doing studies with NAS and working with NAS ourselves for about 12 years. And it was only then that I realized, because I thought it was my choice.
Right. Right. Okay, we have one more. Abby?
Oh, I'm Abby Coons, and I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and one on the way, due in August. And my husband and I, for the past 4 years, have been involved with an open home ministry, which has been fashioned after LaBrie, with another married couple who lives next door to us. And we've been having young people living in our homes up to 3 months at a time. And Becky and I take turns with serving meals and ministering out of our own home. That is still continuing. In the meantime, my husband, we've never been self-supported at all. Jim's always been a building contractor on the side and built custom homes, and that's how our funds come in. When we first got married, I continued to work. I'm a nurse. And when Lindsay was born, I really felt my pleasures at the home, and I really struggled that first year, giving up nursing, because I just graduated like 2 or 3 years before that and really hadn't nursed that long. But after a year, I completely switched around, and I'm so domesticated now. I really am enjoying the home ministry that we have and just being there with the children. And Jim has also, the Lord's provided us with a position of interim pastor for our church, which is temporary and it's ending in March. So now we've been praying, what does the Lord want us to do? Go into full-time ministry with the open home ministry or seek another vocation? So.
Great. Okay, I think, did they give you the outline in your handout? Well, they were supposed to have typed up an outline. And if, would you check and see, because Frances Cosgrove, secretary, took my outline and my, sort of what we're going to do, and I think it would help, I asked her to leave spaces so people could write notes. Okay. The working woman and family responsibilities is not something I ever really felt that I would be talking about. Because I think one of the things that's really crucial for us to consider is God is a very creative God. His scriptural commandments do not change, but there are some things that change that we have to... I remember when I first came with the Navigators, I had come out of a background similar to what the Navigators had were teaching at that time, and that was that you did not wear lipstick, you didn't read magazines that were secular. There were lots of things you didn't do, and then Dawson Trotman realized that times had changed, and the ones that didn't wear lipstick were the women of the street at that point. And the point he made to us was not that it was right or wrong, but that we could decide something was right or wrong, and for the rest of our lives feel that was right or that was wrong. And what that did was that didn't make you get on your knees before God and ask him, okay, this I felt was right for me last week, now what's right for me today? In other words, that sensitivity. So the first question I would like us to consider is three question words, if, why, and when. If it is ever God's will for women to work, why would it ever be God's will, and when is it God's will? The first one, is it ever God's will for a wife and a mother to work? Lloyd Ogilvie's book, Ask Him Anything, has been a real help to me, and I want to read you a quote out of that. In this book, he's answering, I think it's the 10 questions most often asked him through his television and church ministry. He's the senior minister of Hollywood Presbyterian Church in Los Angeles, California. He found out the hard way what is the deepest question asked, and that is, someone stated to him, my greatest need is to know God's perfect will for my life, and my greatest fear is that I will miss it, or if I know what it is, that I would resist doing it. I am married to a very creative man. If you had told me when I was going through nursing, which is very task-oriented, very practical, that I would marry a creative person, I didn't know the difference between a commercial artist and a fine artist. I didn't know what commercial art was. There were lots of things I did not know, nor did I know that God would put me with a creative man and give me creative children, you know. Those are things that you don't really think that far ahead on, but it's enabled me to see that God is a creative God. And I think it's very important for each one in this room and for us to counsel other women that God customizes our lives. And we could sit here and each one of us have a conviction that I will never do this or I will always do this. And it might be right for you, but you might be setting up what you feel is God's will for you, and that person is going to take it as God's will for her or for her situation. And it's obvious that God made us uniquely. Look at the number of women in this room. You're each beautiful in your own right, but you look so different that if I were better with names, I could go around and give names because we are different. We're made differently. I think this is because he wants me to keep abiding. Christ wants us to know him so well, living in the quality of eternal life so profoundly, that he becomes the Lord of the nerve center of our wills. And if he's the Lord of the nerve center of your will, if he wants to change, like in your case, things are changing. Things have changed drastically in every one of our lives in the last 5 years. They've changed drastically in my life in the last 3 years, because our three children, my oldest was 3 and a half when my youngest was born, and then all of a sudden, boom, the youngest is graduating from college. It is his word abiding in me that makes it so unique that I have sufficient data for life's decisions. And the decision regarding working does not have a verse like, thou shalt work or thou shalt not work. There's no verse in Scripture that says, now women, listen to this, thou shalt not work. Rather, I think it may be an abiding and waiting on him for your customized decision for this particular season of your life. You've already told us God provided a customized job for you, one where you don't have to be out of the home 8 hours a day or whatever it is. Ogilvie again says that there are four aids to discerning God's will, which God can use to sharpen our perception. The Bible is basic. And when you're at a navigator conference, you know that the Bible is basic to that decision. It is the magnificent account of how the Lord guides us. Daily reading of Scripture has a releasing residual effect, he says. Day by day, the verity of the Lord's plan, purpose, and providence are kneaded into our thought patterns through the study of Scriptures. So much that for women today would be open to question. My daughters are really concerned because I was home with them when they were little. And they're saying, can we possibly in this day and age marry someone that makes enough that we can even exist if we stay home with our children? Right. So much that would be open to question for others is already there in our minds to provide clear thinking about God's will. And I think that the crucial thing for every woman in this room If you're married to someone who wants that also is to find, to just keep your thinking clear regarding God's will. Not looking at some other woman and what she did or didn't do. Consistent prayer coupled with Bible reading enables us to spread out before the Lord the choices and decisions before us. We can give him lead time to work in our minds and our emotions. I'm so grateful as I look back, I see all the lead time. He had me go back to work part-time because if he had said, okay, Joyce, I want you to become head nurse of the birth center, I'd have said, I'm heading this way. There's no way I can do that. My husband had to remind me how panicked I was just getting back into labor and delivery after so many years out of it. I would come home and say, I don't think I can make it. And he reminded me of that later. But he gave me lead time to work in my mind, my emotions, and my will if I'll commit the decision to him and allow him to give me and my husband the wisdom we'll need to make the choice. I am totally convinced that God does customize his way for each one of us. And I think the reason he does it is to keep me in his word and communing with him. If he didn't customize it, I'd look at someone else and say, well, this is going to be my next step because I saw what happened to Audrey. So now, in 2 years, same thing's going to happen to me as happened to Audrey. And that isn't true, is it? If it were, it would be so simple that I wouldn't need him. So if your life doesn't seem simple, maybe it's that the only simplicity comes at the feet of Jesus. It comes from our own time in the Word of God and in prayer so that we can simplify things. You know, I fear lest Satan beguile you from the simplicity that's in Christ. If your life is complicated and muddy, it's probably being beguiled by Satan from the simplicity that's in Christ. That's in 2 Corinthians 11. I'm unique. I cannot follow the pattern of another steps, just the steps of Jesus. And so I feel the answer to the if is, it may be. And God will reveal to each one of you, as you wait on him, he'll show you your map. Proverbs 16:9 says, in his heart man plans his or her course, but the Lord directs his or her steps. The next one that I had on the outline is why. Why in the world would God want us to work? Now, in my case, there was a unique reason, and that may be the reason most of us go to work, and that is in order to do my husband good and not harm. Proverbs 31, she did him good and not harm all the days of her life. In order to do my husband good, in order to enable him to pursue the career that we were convinced was God's will for him, we needed medical insurance. We were leaving the Navigators. Now, it is a fact of life in this day and age that medical insurance is kind of nice to have when you have 3 kids just about to hit teenage. And so I was working at the Glen just because they needed some help in the office, and I happened to call labor and delivery to ask how a friend was doing who was in labor. And they said, what in the world are you doing? Oh, I'm working in an office. And I got a call from personnel the next day, please come back 2 nights a week. The same day I got my word from the state of Washington that I was losing my license because I hadn't put it on hold. And I said, Lord, that's fine. I'll lose my license if that's what you want me to do. And Don said, maybe we should weigh before the Lord the value of the Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is all I was, that's all my income for those 2 nights took care of was Blue Cross Blue Shield for our family. And this took pressure off of my husband. As the provider of our family, he felt this was crucial. And in looking back on the map, God said, here's your first step. And I'm putting the door there and opening it wide so you really have no choice but to go in. My reason was to help Don accomplish what God wanted for him as his helpmeet. Help is an action verb. The second reason. Homemaking has totally changed. I have a host of servants in my home. I have water faucets. I have a washer and a dryer. I have a freezer. I have wall-to-wall carpet. I have supermarkets. I have a KitchenAid mixer for my bread making. I have Permapress fabrics and Make-A-Mix cookbooks. I just sat down and just thought of some of the things I have in my home. Compared to my grandmother, who when she wanted to, well, my mother, we raised chickens on our farm. When you wanted a chicken, you had to clean the chicken coop, feed the chickens, kill the chickens, pluck the chickens, draw the chickens, and then cook them on a wood stove. My mother churned the butter after she milked the cows. Now I go to Safeway and buy a Holly Farm chicken, and my husband cuts it up because he saw it on TV one day while he was painting how to cut a chicken. And I cook it in a self-cleaning oven. Man has invented many ways to help get our work done, including he invented the sewing machine. And what was the next thing that happened after he invented the sewing machine? They needed women to go to work to operate the sewing machines. Men began to invent things like computers and all kinds of things, and what they needed then was secretaries. Our whole society has changed. We began to devise restaurants, and then we needed people to work in those restaurants. As one of the books that I pointed out in my bibliography, which I'll show you today, says, written by a pastor's wife who went to work for quite a few years in order to supplement their income, men got us into the workforce. And actually, we've always worked. Now it just takes us out of the home, and I think that's the real question. Is perhaps not, perhaps that would solve some of this dilemma when people say, "Oh, what do you do?" And you have to apologetically say, "I don't do anything," instead of saying, "I'm a homemaker." We're all homemakers. I'm a homemaker. I'm just not home 24 hours a day doing it, but I'm still responsible to make a home. Actually, pioneer women worked harder than we do. They had less time probably for their children and for their husbands than you and I do with an 8-hour-a-day job. Have you ever thought about... I've talked to my husband about his mother, who he remembers pumping water to do the wash. Now, I remember when I was a little girl, we spent all day Monday doing the wash and hanging on the line, all day Tuesday doing the ironing, and I now do it on the backstroke on my way to and from work. The children spent a lot of time with both parents, right? Working side by side. The husbands did not go off to work. They went off to the field. So one of the reasons may be that you can still be a homemaker, and we're going to talk about that a little later. And this may be part of making that home. The third thing is something that I feel perhaps you've not really thought about. As you go, make disciples. Ministry may be your third reason. I have a hard time. I would have a hard time now. When my children were little, I had a neighborhood Bible study. There would be no one to come to it now. They're all working. If I'm going to minister to the women that are hurting because their husbands have left them, if I'm going to minister to young single girls who are making some hard decisions about their future, I'm going to have to be where they are. And God may put you in the workforce, among other doctors, among other nurses, among others in your field in medical supply. He may do it because that's where your ministry is. Dr. Elton Trueblood has said, if a woman really belongs to Jesus, she is just as much a member of the body when she sits at her desk in her business house as when she sits in her own home or God's meeting house. Am I God's representative in my home, in the marketplace? Does working perhaps give me a unique opportunity to mingle with special people in deep need? Hurting people today are often out there working. They're working for the reason you did. I have at least a fourth of the 100 nurses that work in the birth center in my unit are either in the process or have been through divorce. I have one that's hurting so deeply. Her husband has left her for another woman. I would never know her if it weren't for working. And as I say, my neighborhood is empty all day long. What if each Christian woman who works made an effort to live like a Christ one? What if I asked God to enable me to see patients, doctors, other nurses, housekeeping from God's point of view? The third thing, the if, why, the fourth thing is when. I feel it's not too hard to establish that there may be times that it is God's will for you to work, and there are some good reasons. I think the third thing you have to know is that there may be a when to it. Seasons are important. I've talked to several groups of women just on the seasons of our lives. And there again, we're individuals before God. The question is, what is right for me right now? Am I content with my present circumstances? If I'm seeking to work because I'm discontent with what I'm doing, then perhaps my first step is to become content with what God has given me to do. Because you know what, you can talk to a group of women and they'll be discontent because they're not working, and you'll talk to the working women and they wish they, I mean, it's always the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. The person with teenagers wishes they were small. The person with small children wishes they would be out of diapers. The one with the empty nest wishes they were all back home. The husband may be doing well. I have one nurse that I hired about 3 years ago. At that time, she had two small children and just wanted to work part-time because her husband was gone a lot, and she just wanted to be out where people were. She now is, well, she's just miscarried her fourth, but she's had another child since then. In the meantime, her husband, who graduated from Fuller Seminary, has gone into stockbroking, is making more money than he can handle, and she has quit to stay home with her three children just because that's what she feels is the right thing to do right now. I have a husband who needs my help, so my situation is different than hers. We chose for me to be home in the early years. But you know what the choice was? Some people say, a lot of the nurses I work with, I have to work. It's because they have a VCR, a microwave. I still don't have a dishwasher. We didn't have two cars. House payment is big. $1,000 a month house payment. That's right. That's right. We wanted to buy 5 acres in Black Forest. And we realized in order to do that, I'd have to go to work, and we chose not to. But we chose not to. It wasn't, I miss nursing too much, and I have to go back. Or I know wives whose husbands want those things, and that's what they want them to do in order that they can have them. And some of those are things that in prayer and in your own unique situation, you have to work out. Obviously. It is not God's plan, perhaps, that all women stay home when children are little. He takes some husbands home at that point in time.
You want
him? He takes some husbands home to be with him when their children are little. Now, I don't think it's God's will that a husband leaves and doesn't support a family, but it does happen when your children are young. So I don't think just having young children is the whole reason. For Don and me, that was right. There again, each man or woman is unique. So when you put a man and a woman together, they have a unique marriage with unique children. And I remember my mother telling me, Joyce, don't read too many books on raising children. Because your children are going to be different than any other children that were ever born. They're a combination of the two of you. And you may understand them at times when the books are giving you conflicting information. Each chapter of your life is freshly written by God. And I don't think anyone can go home and say, well, now Joyce didn't work when her kids are little, and go to your husband and say, I don't think I should work. Because it may not be. It's not going to be the same for you. You don't have the same husband. You don't have. We bought a home when it was cost $17,000 to buy a 5-bedroom home. And a young couple starting out now, it's going to be entirely different. But we didn't have wall-to-wall carpeting, and we had Lucy Sandy's hand-me-down drapes for a long time. No, don't have your dinette table. Was given a gift and bought a round oak table that I'd wanted for years.
Wonderful. I agree with what you say, but what about, when a couple gets married and they already, they get into financial strap or what have you, before they even ask the Lord about their decisions, now, they've got that problem and they're going to have to work out. But let's say girls or young women that are looking to marriage. I think we have to use an example, which is Proverbs 31, with young women that we're working with, as to their responsibilities if they choose to have children. before they get into that.
What do you think about the Proverbs 31 woman?
Well, I think that she kept her home. I think she was available for her children, but she was able to make a little money on the side.
Quite a bit.
While she did this, but it was like maybe something she did within the home or where she was with her children. It wouldn't be like leaving at 8 in the morning and coming home at 5. And I know that she did make extra money, but it seems to me that she was able to do that and still, you know, maybe it was would be like you having a little business in your home, but you're still there with your little ones.
I'm not sure we know that much about her.
No, I'm not.
I think she was a businesswoman.
Well,
I really do.
She was a businesswoman because it's clear that she had the money, had quite a lot of money, but I still think it indicates that she was available.
Okay, let's put that on hold for just a minute because we're going to go into the Proverbs 31 woman. I think one of the things we've got to realize is no one had an 8 to 5 job then. No one had 8 to 5 jobs. Nursing, when I got into nursing, one of my thoughts was I'll never say that. All the older nurses used to say, now when I was in nursing, you worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you did, and you had Christmas off whether you wanted it or not. And that was it. You worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and you mostly scrub floors. So I think we have to be careful when we compare. Okay, I think the other thing that we have to do as far as when is realize everyone has different abilities to cope. You know, I am a very efficient person. It's not my fault. I think it's partly my makeup. It's partly nursing. It's partly my days in the pink house. But my husband's mother used to point out to me all the time, and it's true, I can get done in an hour what some women spend 8 hours doing. Now, I may go sit down and read the rest of the day or whatever, but I can do things on the backstroke that other women, no fault of theirs, and it's no fault of mine. It's the way God put me together. What I do quickly. I may drop a lot, and I may stumble a few times because I move fast. But that's the way I am. Everyone has unique gifts. Some women have the ability to do more than others. Some women have the ability to stay home and work on crafts and sell them, and that's their job out of the home. I would go crazy doing that. If I had to do crafty things at home and sell those to make my money. I have a neighbor that could support her whole family on her sewing. I could barely, you know, I had to get her help when I made a dress for the girls. I'm not a seamstress. Some have different physical and emotional health and strength. Different mates. Let me give you an example. I have a nurse that I work with. She's now the day assistant head nurse. Her husband is an entrepreneur whose most of his ventures fail. And he is not only in debt, he's declared bankruptcy. And he is not fulfilling his scriptural responsibility to support the family. That's all there is to it. And that he goes right on. I mean, she, another long story, but she's a very laid-back person, has very laid-back children, and he's marvelous with her children. She said, you know, actually Bill's better with the kids than I am. But Camille needs to work, not just for finances, but because he does his entrepreneurial things out of their home, and it's not probably particularly scriptural, the basis on which he's working now, but that's not for us to judge. Her sister is married to an entirely different type of a man. He supports them very nicely, but she has got one of the most hyperactive, high-strung children I think I've ever known. For one to take her children to a daycare center, they go to a Christian daycare center, and the kids cry the days they don't get to go. They love it there. The other one has to work. I mean, she's read everything Dobson has written, and she works constantly with this very hyperactive child, and she has another one and another one on the way. And her husband provides a very nice living for them. Their situations are so different that you could say all you want about, well, the first one should stay home and make this entrepreneur support them. He doesn't. And is she going to say, well, I'll leave him? Or is she going to say, thank you, Lord, this is the man I'm married to, I thank you for him, and he loves it when, if the kids are sick, they stay home with Dad. He's very patient with them, he teaches them, he loves to have, he'll have all the neighborhood kids come in and teach them things. That's just one of the entrepreneurial things he does. I'm not saying these are right or wrong. I'm just saying these are two very different people. They're actually half-sisters, and they're very different, and they cannot say what's God's will for one is God's will for the other. My sister never worked when her kids were little. Husband makes a lot of money, and he travels about 6 months out of the year, so when the children were all raised, she decided she'd go back to school because she's a gifted interior decorator, and she did, and she was on the dean's list, graduated at age 50 from the University of California in interior decorating the same month as she was diagnosed with lupus.
What is lupus?
It's a very serious connective tissue disease similar to multiple sclerosis. It's like a cancer of the connective tissues. They treat it with chemotherapy, and it's deteriorating, and she should be an invalid in bed, but she's not. Glory, all praise to the Lord. But she couldn't take the job. And Joyce, her sister, me, I'm very well physically, and my husband is an artist. That's very different than a business executive, vice president of wine stocks in California. So let me sum it all up. There are all kinds of reasons for working women. Some work because they're bored, because their home's so well taken care of. You know, I would have a hard time right now with all my children gone, just staying at home all day. I would not be home. I would probably spend the same amount of time on homemaking, keeping my home as I do right now. I would be involved perhaps in Bible studies and some of those things, and that would be okay. But I'm involved in Bible study with a group of nurses from the birth center. Some out of necessity, some to provide extras, some because they're lonely, some because they love their career. God's gifted them in what they do. Some because their skills are needed. I know some that are working here at Glenary because they need the particular skills that woman has. Or you could sum it up, God's unique design for them at this point in time. Arnold Toynbee says, man or woman's work in God's world cannot be healthy or beneficent unless we consecrate it. And then I don't care what it is, it's sort of like Brother Lawrence. It matters not whether you're washing dishes in the scullery, taking care of three small children, or the head nurse of a birth center, or the marvelous ministry you must have with the side effects of your ministry with women you're fitting for breast prosthesis. Second to none, the role you can have in their lives. But only if it's consecrated. Conversely, if you are consecrated and doing what he wants you to do, it doesn't matter what it is. Now, the second thing I want to consider is who else has done it. And I believe that Proverbs 31, that woman was Wonder Woman. Perhaps the busiest woman, working wife and mother of all time. Some want to meet Abraham first. Some want to go right straight to Paul. I want to go find out who that Proverbs 31 woman is and have a long talk with her because she leaves me breathless. And as I told you, I'm efficient. She was totally committed to her husband and children. She was a seamstress. She was into real estate. She was into farming. She was physically strong. She had an outreach. She provided for her family's future. You know, it looks to me like her husband sat at the gates. She taught. She was respected and loved by her family. She was a working woman who tended to her family responsibility. I think she's our pace setter. And I don't think it's specific that she had an 8-to-5 job or didn't have an 8-to-5 job. I don't think she could have done it between 8 and 5. I'm not sure how she did it in 24 hours. And I think that's what we all have. Oh, yes. That's right. That's right. Of course, she had servants. Sarah had servants. But so do you and I. She did not have microwaves. She did not have supermarkets. She did not have an oven. We all have servants. Lydia in Acts, the seller of purple, dealer in expensive dye. She must have followed the Proverbs 31 example and had a tremendous capacity. She worshiped God. She brought her whole household to God. And she invited these four men, Paul and his associates, to stay in her home as long as they ministered there. It's not Acts, it's Timothy. Sarah, in Genesis 18, 3 through 10, Abraham invited guests. Thank you. Abraham invited guests to their home. What did he do? He hurried in to get Sarah to make bread. You know, it's the old story. The husband invites the guests in, and the story behind the scenes. She was capable. She had some of us could say yes, but she had a very wealthy husband and lots of servants. But you know what? Have you ever talked to a woman that has servants? It sometimes takes more time to organize them than it would to do it yourself. I think I prefer the servants I have in my home to having, you know, the interpersonal relationships that she must have had to have with all her servants. Well, she had some pretty unique interpersonal relationships with one of her servants, didn't she? I know wives of wealthy men, their role is, as a businesswoman is very different. I know one. Do you know what her role is? She tends to his investments. She invests the money he makes and volunteers in a hospital as a nurse. It blows my mind. Hey, don't we all tend to our husband's investments by the way our stewardship of the money? Yeah, we all tend to them, don't we? Abigail in 1 Samuel 25:3. I think this is the first time when I've studied this that I've considered Abigail in this light. Partly because, as you remember, Abigail's husband was a bit of a nerd, and he was going to face David and fight him, and Abigail took control, used very good judgment. She had a picture of what was right and what was wrong. She was a very good salesperson, and she had a part in a very godly man's life. She eventually became David's wife after her husband dropped dead. Abigail was an aggressive woman who saw far beyond the immediate circumstances. She saw that a man of God was involved in this situation, and she took control to try to save her husband's life. So I think we have examples in Scripture. And then I'm briefly going to go over what now. A true helpmeet is one who helps her mate. How can you do this best right now?
With this business, my husband started out 3 years ago, that was a real struggle for me because, see, I didn't want to get back in the working world. Uh-huh. I hated it.
Uh-huh. You'd been there. You're not like the one who's never been there and thinks, oh my gosh, if I could only get out of the house and go to work. You'd been out of the house and had to work. And I've heard a lot of women say that. And they had to go because that was the best help they could be to their husband. Some, it's to stay by the stuff so he can do what God has given him to do. That was true in Audrey's case. But I think it's important for us to realize, no matter what it is, whether it's to go to work or stay home, you have a part in all that he accomplishes. Dawson Trotman was very strong in this. When Lila was in bed with tuberculosis and I was doing the housework in the Pink House and taking care of the children, when he would go to minister in a Billy Graham crusade or go to Africa or wherever he'd go, he was very, very careful to say, you have had a part in everything that's been accomplished in what I've done. It was needful for someone to stay by the stuff at home. And it's a vicarious but a glorious ministry. And I think particularly with someone who's gone through all the education that Julie has as a doctor. I remember Carolyn Sparks totally gave it up for a period of time to raise her children, thinking she would never be back in it. And then when the children were all teenagers, he decided to go to seminary. She went back and finished another residency and became a pediatrician to enable her husband to go to seminary. And you know what took them to Africa was the navigators and her ability as a pediatrician. She's working as a pediatrician in Africa, and he's ministering for the NAVs.
I tell you, I was for five years. I was used to working 130 hours a week.
Just like a head nurse.
So then when we had our first child, my husband, who is a pediatrician, stayed at home. He stayed at home the whole 8 months with the
the baby while I was finishing up the last year of the residency. And then all of a sudden I was back in, after 5 years of this 100 to 130 hours a week, this is, you know, 5 years of that, all of a sudden I was at home and working part-time. You know, we believe that somebody should be at home with the child all the time. That didn't necessarily, at that, we weren't sure that it needed to be the mother, but someone needed to be at home with them all the time. And it dropped down to 20 to 30 hours a week. And I tell you, that was...
But you had withdrawal symptoms.
Oh, I did. I had withdrawal symptoms. It was really, really hard. But I had to really go through a lot of dealing with the stopping the job. And even though I wasn't really, I hadn't really stopped. It just felt like I really had.
Yes.
We moved to this small town in Ohio this past year, and we're not going to be there but for a few more months. But I didn't know what I would end up doing there because my husband's going to work full time, and there wasn't any hospital there or anything. Well, God provided the hospital about 45 minutes away, which has been a wonderful time for my praying, driving to work. It's been my, you know, a good quiet time for me, except I don't have to go through my scriptures. I have to memorize them ahead of time and then go over them while I'm driving. But I can work at night. And they had shifts that were real good for me. And I did well after, after work 130 hours a week.
You can do well any time.
Working at night too. So it has worked out. You know, we just have to really thank the Lord that He worked it out that way for us. But I do believe, and it is hard when you're in the profession too, because when you do cut back, people can't understand that. Most people cannot understand why you are cutting back. I was an assistant professor too at one of the universities after I finished. So people really could not understand why I cut back. It's really hard.
My mother couldn't understand why I gave up. I went through a 5-year nursing program, and why do you give up nursing to work in the pink house for the Trotman family?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it would be no problem to her if I had given it up to get married and take care of my own children. It was the fact that I was taking care of somebody else's children. One of the interesting things in our situation, which is sort of like yours, when I went back to work when the youngest was in junior high, Don was working at home, and they never came home to an empty house. In fact, I think in retrospect, they probably needed, our daughters needed their father at that point probably more than they needed me. And I'm not a liberated woman in the sense that the world is thinking of it, but I am a liberated Christian in the sense that I believe God is creative. And I didn't even think about it for a long time, and it suddenly dawned on me that He had enabled us to have Don there. And that isn't true for everybody.
I personally think I did a better job than my husband does, you know, now, at the age that they're at now, but maybe later on it's going to be different, but I think right now, I really think
I did a better job. I think it's so exciting knowing how the always is changing.
Oh, isn't it?
Wouldn't it be a drag going tonight?
It would, and you just know exactly what to look forward to 5 years from now?
Yeah, I think it's me.
Second thing on what now is that the what now may be to go out and do battle. You know, I think it is easier to stay home.
Yeah.
And it kind of depends. It would not be easier for me to stay home and keep ministering. I could stay home and bake bread, and I could stay home and not pay any attention to any of the neighbors around me, get involved with other Christian friends. For me, it's a challenge to be at work and be salt.
You know, I'm just going to add another thing, but before I started this new job, see, I hadn't worked for 2 months after we made this move. I think that was kind of hard, but before I started this new job, the Lord brought back to my mind the story of Joshua and Caleb and how they went over into, it is a battle when you go out there, and He brought to my mind the story of Joshua and Caleb, and how they looked at the situation and said, oh my gosh, all the other side looked at it and they said, we can't go in there, there's giants in that land, we can't go in there. But Joshua and Caleb came back and they said, you know, God, we will go into the land. We can go into this land. And the first day that I drove to work, I just felt that God was telling me there are going to be giants. It is going to be a battle going into that land. But fear not, and I had a lot of scriptures on fear, and God just did marvelous things. He has just—it's just been really, really neat what He's done. But it is a battle out in the. But it can be a battle at home.
At home,
too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, yeah, every day.
Satan will see to it that there's a battle wherever you are. But when you go out there, you're mingling. You know what you're mingling with? I love this. I read it in a book. You're mingling with the results of Rosie the Riveter, because that was the turning point, wasn't it? World War II, they needed women to go work, and so they had these songs about Rosie the Riveter. And so all these women went out of the home and worked, and then they didn't want to go back. You're too young to know about that. World War II, a lot of women went to work. In fact, I babysat a woman who went to work as a riveter in where they're making planes and so forth. Rivets.
Yeah. Oh, I'm
and there was a song called Rosie the Riveter. Well, all these women had been at home, and then World War II brought a real turning point in women going into the workforce because they desperately needed them, because the men all were out fighting the war. Well, that changed our world, and so you and I are living in that changed world, and I think that's what we have to be aware of. And so the situation where I can share Christ may have just changed location for some of us. Your husband may need temporary or long-term help, and you can enlarge your tent or capacity. You're a beauty operator. What a marvelous opportunity, because who talks their problems out more than a woman having her hair done? I mean, you probably know things about the women in your community, the hurts and the needs for Jesus Christ. You probably know things the pastor doesn't know. And this pastor's wife that wrote this book on the working woman brought this out. That she, I have a beautiful neighborhood situation that's classic on friendship evangelism. There was a woman that lived down the corner that had just moved in. And one of the women in my Bible study felt like she had no gift for evangelism. She would have no courage to share Christ with someone. But she was a wonderful person, a warm-hearted person. And she was out walking one day when Mary was out walking, and she invited Mary to come to church with her. And she happened to invite her to the Daily Vacation Bible School teacher's training. And Sharon Bob, who's with the Navigators, gave the bridge illustration that night, and Mary became a Christian. As a result, Mary's husband became a Christian, and the whole family had been walking with the Lord ever since. Now, if Nancy hadn't been out and about, she had a contact with Mary who never would have met the pastor at that church, who never would have met Sharon Bob, who shared the bridge illustration, but she was part of the link because she was there. Then the other thing is, how can my children call me blessed if I work? Proverbs 31 woman, her children called her blessed. Yeah, right. Thank gosh, she's gone. Huh? Might not be that I'll have more time for my family, but I'll use my time better because I'm working. There are lots of women, and I think I'm one of those. I think we all respond to pressure, but whatever the pressure is, whether it's the pressure Audrey had of so many people working, living in her home, or the pressure of involvement, perhaps in volunteer work at your church, which is a form of work outside the home, or the pressure, whatever that is, it may force you, it forces most of us to be better organized so that we have the priority straight. We're better organized so you have the quality.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You could spend 8 hours a day watching TV, and there are women who do. You could be totally ministry-oriented. You could keep a perfect house, and that would take more than 8 hours a day. You could be coffee-clatching, or you can be working. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that you're still there for the needs of your children, and those needs change every year.
We have a Bible study going on right now. But we're doing Becoming a Woman of Excellence.
Mm-hmm.
With some ladies from our church, who's about 15, they're very young mothers, and we meet once a week. And the thing that's so amazing to me is that, you know, these moms really do want to be home. Mm-hmm. They're coming out of the liberated, you know, lifestyle,
and realize that the Lord does want them to be at home, and so they're accepting that, but the things they're having a hard time with is what to do while I'm at home, because they weren't taught what to do when they were at home. And I find that, you know, my mother wasn't at home. The things I have learned to do came from my grandmother.
Hmm.
She's the one that has taught me to do all these neat things that she did as a young mother, you know. And so I see all these other moms, they don't know how to take care. They don't know how to cook, and they don't know how to, you know, take care of their home. And so they're bored. But yet they want to be at home.
And boredom is a real tool of Satan.
They had a stay-at-home mom that didn't make
them. No, they didn't. No, their moms worked too. You see, so they had the desire to do the things. You know, they had the desire to pull out a recipe and make that cake from scratch because they know that that would be the best thing for their family, other than giving them, say, a box cake mix. But they don't know how to do it. You know, and it's sad. You know, but I see the generation that had that problem and the outcome of it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's wrong for them to make the box mix. You know.
In this altitude, it's better.
But, you know, it's just heartbreaking because they have this desire, but they don't know how. And this is one thing that they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do.
They
do. Now, see, my kids probably know how to do more.
I don't make box cakes.
You're right.
I've never made one.
But my kids...
But see, that all comes with self-confidence, too. Who can they talk with? Well, you know, like if you make a recipe and it really blows up, you know, what did I do wrong? Some of them say, I can't even call a mother and say, well, Mom, what did I do wrong with this recipe?
But was that because the mother worked? Or because the mother wasn't
a
homemaker?
Well, my mother worked, and we did box mixes. You know, sure, I could have asked my mother for a recipe book, and I'm sure she would have told me where it was, but... I just never did.
I work and probably have the biggest collection of recipe books this side of the Walden's bookstore. I mean, I think the issue is not what that the mother worked, but why she worked. See, I work out of necessity, and I still feel like a homemaker, and I probably have made my children are probably going to be better homemakers because I work, because they knew... I had one...
You had a time when you were home with them. You didn't work the whole time you were growing up, and that does make a difference.
I don't think it would have made a difference. I'm glad I was home when they were little, but I think my philosophy is that my number one priority was as a wife and home mother and homemaker, and my job was what I did because of being a part of that homemaking.
Well,
and I still would have been a homemaker.
I resented the fact that I had girlfriends that moms were home
mm-hmm.
when they came home from school and mine wasn't, and I resented.
Well, see, I happened to be a nurse, and I was always home when they came home from school, even. I worked when my youngest was in kindergarten for a year. I worked two nights a week. And I would sleep till she got out of kindergarten, that's all.
But that's the difference. You know, you can work if you're, you know, that worked out great for you because your kids didn't come home and make you house. We always did. And I resented that and had a real problem with that as a teenager with my mother because I envied those other girlfriends
But I've known kids who've come home. In fact, Don has a cousin who came home to a house where her mother was every day, and the breakfast dishes still weren't done. Her mother was there, but her mother was not a homemaker. She wouldn't even get the wash done. The clothes would still be in the hamper because she puttered all day. Your children have come home to an empty house, I bet, haven't they?
Mine? No.
They're
little too. My kids, I hope, will never come home to an empty house.
But I mean, you weren't there. Or are you there when they come home?
No, my husband takes the children up there at 4:30, 4 to 5, 3 days a week. I work 3 days during the weekend on Saturdays and Sundays.
See, what you've done is what I feel, if you have to work in the middle, you've tried to be creative and customized it.
Well, that's good, though, but they're not alone.
Well, you know, my kids, I've taken them to the sitter when I felt like, you know, I guess I've watched my son more than my daughter. I thought, it's the guilt of the working mother, I guess, you know. The days that they don't cry when you put them in the car with the sitter, you think, God, I wish they'd cry. and give you that look that your grandmother gives you when you drive them off to the nursing home, you know. I'll cure you when I see them next time. You know, that sort of thing. I think, but that is, you know, not every day. If I had that every day, I'd be searching the scriptures more to see if this really is the Lord's will. I don't work outside the home because I have a $1,000 house payment. I work outside the home because I've always worked since I was in fifth grade, and I am driven. I have a 3,000 square foot house. I have no maid. I don't make things in box mixes.
You're an efficient person.
I'm a maniac. And I guess I came to this class thinking, I'll bet the navigator woman will say, a woman should not work outside. And I was very curious that my husband wanted to sit in. He'll be the only man here.
Oh, no, last time I did this, we had a man here.
I think that, I feel like it's working well. I don't have to put my kids in a daycare where, I honestly think our society, it may have changed since World War II, but I think this is my feeling, and everybody has to be convicted by the word on it.
That's right.
It's the same way with abortion. I mean, there are Christians who still think there's pro-choice in the world, and that's when God has to deal with them, whether that baby is living the minute it's conceived or not. I agree that it's living when it's conceived, but I think that is the thing. You know, we have to be convicted in the word. And,
that's right.
I feel sorry for the family who's gotten themselves in a situation where the woman works 5 days a week, she puts the kid in the daycare from 7 to 5:30, and the kid is in a daycare among all other kids, never has the time to be in a home situation. I've been real fortunate. I've had three different sitters. They've all been Christian women. You know, they love my kids and treat my kids like their own. They have prayer time with them. They read to them.
Well, I think you mentioned one key thing, too, and it's the husband. If you are working and a husband doesn't want you to, you know, then you don't have a choice in that because you have to submit to him. And but if you have a husband that says, yes, you must work, and you don't want to, there again, you have to submit to him.
Well, if
you've got a problem, you know, with that husband, he'll deal with you, not me, you know. Well, my husband says to me, you know, I want you to go and help me with them. You know, I did not want to, but I had to submit to him. And I had to do it in the right attitude. But God, I had to first go to God and say, you know, forgive me because I had this bad attitude. You know, but if a husband says you work or you don't work, you have to submit to him.
Or sometimes it's going to be a situation like with us where we sit down together and try to find out what's God's will for right now. You know, he didn't say you will or you won't. Actually, I'll tell you what it's been with Don. We need for me to work at this point, and it would be very hard on him if he didn't know that I love what I do. If I had a job that I did not enjoy, then Don would have a real hard time because he feels it is scriptural for him to, you know, there are those that say he's to be the provider. Well, he is providing what I need and what our family needs. That doesn't have to be just money. Certainly we could not get along just on our income with three kids in college. He providing what? Don provides leadership. He's the head of our home. He provides, I respect him. And we have worked out together that at this point in time, you will go to work two nights a week if that, and he wanted to know, is that okay with you? It wasn't a, Joyce, now I want to do this art thing, so you must work, because goodness knows I don't want to have to make that much money. That wasn't it at all. Right. We're a team, and he happens to be the leader of our team. And as far as he's concerned, if I came home one day and said, I cannot stand this anymore, then he would look to the Lord either for a job or something else. But he knows I enjoy what I do. I'm challenged by it, and that's a ministry. I think the Proverbs 31 children, when they rose up and called their mother blessed, it wasn't just because she was home all the time. There have been times when I have left notes for my kids saying, I need for you to get dinner tonight. There's a pound of hamburger thawed out. Now, there's nothing wrong with them having to learn early in life what to do with that. I don't want them to learn the day they start learning the day they get married. Or I know kids that say, why should I do that? You're home all day. Now, I'd have a little talk with that child in the first place. But my kids couldn't say that to me because I wasn't there, and I'd say, I need for this whole house to be clean by the time I get home tonight. Hasn't hurt them at all.
I think, too, I mean, and I feel like, you know, Lord kind of dealt with me on this, too, to ease some of the, you know, times that I've had guilt feelings for working outside home, but I feel very fortunate that the Lord has given me the mate I have, because his occupation, he makes a good living, but he also has family time. And I could not handle it if I had a husband that was an executive that was never there with the kids.
Which is what my sister says.
I absolutely could not. My dad was never there for us. I thought he might be here for his grandkids, and we live in the same town, and he's just now going to see his grandson since last year, this weekend. I mean, that is a whole other situation. I feel like, you know, the Lord should really deal with a man. What is the difference between a man and a woman when it comes to responsibility to their offspring? I mean, and I think also another thing is that I have never been, I guess maybe with my first child, it's a different feeling because you think no one else can do it but you. But I finally realized that, you know, I'm not the only one that can care for that child and do some of the things for the child. And I think mothers can kind of get into that syndrome where they think, well, nobody else can do it.
Of course, you know where we're nipping that in the bud is in the birth center. You as a pediatrician can appreciate this. We're now handing, when a baby's born, I put the obstetrician puts the baby on the mom's tummy. We wrap it in a warm blanket and we get it warm so the pediatricians don't complain that the temperatures drop too much. And then I wrap it in a clean warm blanket and say, here, Dad, here's your daughter. Second one to hold the baby is Dad. Don never touched his son until we left the hospital. I barely could touch him because I was not supposed to unwrap him. But the involvement, the emotional and physical bonding with the dad is taking place in Lamaze classes. Women come to me for antepartum testing, and she talks about how their husbands aren't so totally involved with that pregnancy in a way that they never were before. And that involvement continues. As far as I'm concerned, that's what's been beautiful about our family, is our children don't just rise up and call me blessed, but they have written some tremendous tributes to their father. Immeasurably more was the last one, and that's the fringe benefits that I feel we need to look at. How can I do all this? How can I be that Proverbs 31 woman? Our grandmothers work 16 hours a day. Some of us complain because we have to work 8 hours a day and come home and fix a meal. You know, it took 16 hours for a lot of our grandmothers, and their work was never done. There is one thing worse than too much to do, and that's not enough. We have a lot of help in our homes. In fact, it was interesting. I went to a dinner party, or it's a buffet for our office staff. All the doctor's office staffs are invited over to the hospital for this buffet just to get acquainted, and I was part of the hospital team that was to greet them. And I went to the head dietitian afterwards to thank her for this tremendous buffet. I said, you guys, your cooks must have been working hours. She said, Joyce, everything in that buffet was pre-frozen. I mean, hors d'oeuvres you would not believe. And she said, the only thing we did was the dip for the vegetables. She said, I can't afford to have my cooks at what I pay them working on a buffet like this. I can buy it cheaper. Now, I tell you that as an example of why a lot of our women are bored now. Now, you may say, well, I feel as a homemaker, I want to do all this. I'm not so sure that's efficient in God's economy when there are women hurting because they're divorced. There are women who need to be in Bible study. I feel there are women who need the ministry I can give them as a Christian wife and mother when I do their antepartum testing. I think there's immeasurably more that women can do now because we have so much being done for us. And one of the first things is that I think that we have to deal with what the basis is, our attitude, whether we can say good morning God or good God morning. There's a whole basic difference in attitudes of people. Whether we can deal with the guilt feelings and just say, I don't have to feel guilty because I'm doing what God wants me to do. I don't have to worry about what Abby does. I'm not Abby, and I'm not married to Abby's husband. I am Paula, and before God we feel this is right for us. And then I don't have to have guilt. I loved what Dear Grace Peterson said in a Bible study one day, she said, you know, I don't think God wants us to feel guilty. 1 John 1:9 should take care of that. And then I don't feel guilty because this, this, and this is happening because so-and-so didn't have that. My tape on Thanksgiving by Dr. Bob Smith on the two pictures. One went away from the fountain saying, what's the point of getting filled? I always have to get, somebody always empties me. And the other one said, thank God I have this fountain here where I can go get filled every time I get empty. And I think your attitude, oh, woe is me, I have to work. So-and-so is unable to stay home with her children. And you had, your life circumstances were such that you had to work when your little girl was young. Rather than, oh, thank God, I have the physical ability to work. One day my sister called me soon after her lupus was diagnosed, and she was really having a struggle. She was on methotrexate and prednisone, and she called, and I was a head nurse at the time and thinking, oh, why do I have this? I mean, big things happening that day that I was having a hard time coping with, 120 hours a week, and I got a 5 cent an hour raise to do all this, and oh, poor me. And Joanne Collins says, oh, aren't you thankful, Joyce, that you have the physical ability to go to work today?
I think someone told me once that you can make anything work. You know, anything that you do work, but you can also make it fun. And it's this I have to work. The whole I have to work is a negative comment. And work, you know, it's kind of like, well, that's why they named it work, because it's not supposed to be fun. I don't agree. I don't agree. I think that...
Well, it does make a difference. When I had to work, I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I didn't have to work, it was an enjoyment, and I looked for ways to minister to people. You know,
there's a real key right there. That and which came first? You're looking for ways to minister to people. The second time you went to work, you were a Christian. Mm-hmm. And so you saw it as a ministry, not as a work.
But you know, I have a friend right now, Dr. Hart. I have such a struggle because she's been married 20 years. And the whole 20 years she's had to work. And her husband is an airline pilot, so he's provided a good...
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she can hardly deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Janet, you know, who is going to hire me? I have no education, I have no gifts. I mean, she said, I don't even know where to start with this job, you know. And I know that, you know, you don't want to say to a woman, well, listen, you need to do something on the spot in case you leave.
Right,
that.
Right.
That's what you're thinking, because you just never know. But my heart just breaks for her. And, you know, she worked before she married him. And once they were married, he told her he did not want her to work, and so she's always submitted to that. She never had to financial, and she didn't work it. And those are the women that, you know, this has just thrown her. I don't know if she's going to make it. I really don't. I mean, we keep talking about, you know, you gotta look for the good in this. There has to be some good in this. And the good that's gonna come from this is the fact that now God, He's the only one you've got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it is a struggle for us wives. We depend on God first, husband second, but we get those mixed up sometimes.
Right.
You know, because husband talks and we don't think we, you know, we don't, God does too, we don't hear Him. You know? And then, so I say to her, you know, God is gonna be the good in you.
But she can become bitter over that, just like somebody else can become bitter over the fact that they have to work. And almost everything done in our homes could be hard done, and she's got that problem of boredom is worse than too much to do. And that feeds into the bitterness. And one of the things that this book pointed out is that there is the problem in our society now, not only of the fact that we have so many servants. We have careers that we've started out with that we liked, and that's why we did it, because we're marrying a little later, but we're also living a lot longer. The chance of a woman being left a widow for a long time is much greater now than it was before, because we, for all the criticism of those of us in the medical profession, we must be doing some things right, because we are living longer. And not only are we living longer, we're feeling better while we're living longer. You know, I'm going on 57, and I've never felt better in my life physically. And we have a picture of an aunt of Don's who died at 55, and she looked 75. And when you hear what she did in a day, this 16-hour day on the farm had its repercussions. And by the time they were 55, they were in retirement physically. Whereas those of us who have been gifted with these servants, we don't have that same problem. The other thing is that I feel like one of the tools we have for that exceeding abundant, which can happen to all of us, whether we work because it's necessary or just because we feel it's God's will, and that is we have so many things that can help us be better organized. To organize is to form into a whole consisting of interdependent parts or coordinated parts, and I think that's necessary whether you're the mother of three small children, and I think it comes in good stead to be a nurse or a doctor if you've done it. You've learned to organize your time, if nothing else, and you have a 24-hour day. And that's one of the problems with going out to work, is that, that's right. I remember when my second one was on the way and my first one was going to be 18 months old, I said to Marina Downing, how in the world do you do it? It takes me all day to take care of Scott. She had seven. She said, well, there's 24 hours in the day and it can't take more than that. But I think sometimes it did. I think you're right. And that's a full-time job. But, you know, I would have to get on a panel and argue on the side that perhaps if I, in retrospect, had it to do over and I were told, okay, and God said, now, Joyce, you can either be home when your kids are little or you can be home when they're teenagers, I might pick teenage. I think it's probably worse for teenagers to come to an empty house than for little kids to be taken care of by someone else whose loving arms hold them. You know, I had a patient the other day. I said, are you going to have to go back to work after your baby's born? She said, no. My mother is widowed. She was living in New Jersey on a very good income, but it doesn't make it in New Jersey. It's very expensive to live there. So she's moved in with us because she can make it very nicely financially in what she has. She's going to take care of my baby. Well, you know, I'd be hard put to say that it might not be more important for her if she has to work now and stay home with that child when it's a teenager, because I think teenage children coming home to empty house is a disaster.
Particularly.
Yes. Yeah. But I don't think it's ever been good. But, you know, that's the same as a lot of other arguments. It's who's to say that ever there's ever a good time. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that...
Then the other hand, there's no guarantee, because the devil is active and working. He's going to creep in any place you want. And, I mean, I've got a perfect example where, you know, Christian home, Christian kids, straight-A student, I'm a drug addict.
Mm-hmm. Well, you but know, God does not make a robot of a child growing up in a Christian home.
You know, mother was home every day of her life. Mm-hmm. You know.
Let's sum it up with this, because I think we're supposed to be through. The demands of making a home may have lessened. The demands of being a wife and mother have increased. It's the being. And I think that has to sum it all up for all of us. The demand of being a wife is different for you than it is for anybody else, because you're the wife of a different husband. And he has a different role, a different ministry. I had a hard time adjusting to the fact that my husband was not going to be a full-time navigator. I certainly did not think when I came to the Glen that I was going to be married to a full-time artist. That doesn't make any sense. I'm going to be in the mission field with a navigator husband. I have a Christ one for a husband. And this is God's role for him. So where am I? I am the wife of Don Enright. And I am in the process of being his wife and the mother of our children. Working has made me more in tune. It's helped me set better priorities, because I have to consider them every day. It's made me appreciate more what I have. I went to work and I thought, oh, I'm working with Blanche. Her husband's full-time at Ford Aerospace. And no benefits are taken out of her income. That must be nice. I have to have all these benefits taken out of my income. I can either do that or I can say, oh, thank God I have a husband. We're working together to raise our family, to honor Jesus Christ, and I have the ability to get these benefits. More in tune with my family. I think I've been much more in tune with my family, because I've heard of some of the problems the other mothers are having and realized it was because Dad was never there. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm so grateful. My husband's working at home right now. And when Becky comes home, she thinks the sun rises and sets when Don tells it to anyway. And she would talk to him about some of the sexual problems at school, some of the drug problems, and she'd walk in, head straight for the studio, and talk to her dad. 40% of American women work. We have longer years of grown families. We have the results of divorce. We have a life expectancy. But you and I have Ephesians 3, 14 through 20 that says, now unto him that is able to exceeding abundantly above all that we could ask or think, and I think it involves this, he can do exceeding abundantly in helping you determine what's right for you and what your priorities are right now. My priorities are totally different today than they were 21 years ago when Lori was born. And Becky was 22 months and Scott was 3 and a half. Now my priorities were a lot different then. My children are still second only to my husband, but now it's in prayer. Now it's in keeping them in my prayers and writing letters to them and being in, oh, the things that I pray now as far as life partners and their choices of professions. Whereas then, so much of it was physical that sometimes I was too exhausted to pray. I'm not physically as exhausted now, and I have more time to just really bear them up to the throne of grace. Ephesians 3, 14 through 20 says he can do exceeding abundantly above all I could ask or think. In I'm not in Africa as a missionary. I'm at Penrose Community Hospital as a missionary. I'm representing Jesus Christ. Every baby shower I go to because I'm there, every day I go to work and hear of another heartache, I am a missionary right there. And I am setting, do you realize the example you're setting for your daughters and your sons and what their future will be? And what do you do when your daughter comes and says, Mother, what if I don't marry someone that will let me stay home with my babies? What an opportunity to talk to your daughter about how she waits on God for a life partner.
That's how my daughter is. You know, she worked before she was married. So her and her husband, she married a Christian, and they discussed whether she would or wouldn't work, and they agreed that she would work because she had a child. They rent, they have not bought a home, but that was in their agreement before they even went in and had a child. So we married 3 years and decided they wanted to stay with her. And they said, well, we don't have our home yet. Well, that's okay. We want to go. And then they had to say, well, if we continue to rent, we have this baby, that means we still won't get a home because I want to raise the baby. No, I want to be homeless. And they agreed on that. But they talked about all of this before each step occurred. And she doesn't feel guilty that she's not working and that she doesn't have a home like a lot of her friends do. And she says, listen, I can always get a home. Always. Anytime. But I'll never always have this baby. That's just her attitude.
It fits her fine. Mm-hmm. You're right. I think my husband went to the finances thing, and we've always, maybe it's because, well, I'm not sure why, but sometimes I felt bad because we've been rich and we had tremendous school loans to pay off. Well, God doesn't want us to be in debt either. So we tried to get those paid off. Everybody thought we were real dumb paying off our loans because they were low interest, you know, the educational loans. And, mm-hmm. But God, even though they're low education loans, he doesn't want us to be in debt. And really, it's nothing. For a while, I really felt bad. I just really felt bad because everybody I knew, people that no education, hadn't gone through any of the hard work that I've gone through, they all had these beautiful homes because they were in debt too.
And not very mobile.
Right, that's right. But you'll
get that home.
Oh, it's just wonderful. I was so glad to hear he brought back a little thing. I was so glad to hear that. He's still walking about with it. It's a stupid thing, but you know, in your heart and from scripture, it seems like that was right. But it was just nice to hear it come up with someone else who knows the Word of God.
Well, you know, when we made the decisions that I would not work when our kids were little, in our particular case, that was what we decided to do. And that's the basis on which our girls are hoping that will happen to them. Because part of it for them was because they saw so many of their friends going home to empty houses. Mm-hmm. You know, they would walk home in Holland Park and there was no one there. And that just blew Becky's mind because when she comes home, she is absolutely bubbling over. I mean, she is a bubbler anyway. And she just has to share everything that's happened. And she needed someone there. And I remember when I was first considering marriage at age 31 and my sister had gotten married at 19, she said, remember, Joyce, you'll have years to be known as the best housekeeper in the world or the best this or whatever, but only about 20 years to give everything you've got to being a mother. And that's going to vary with everybody. But it is true that now that wall-to-wall carpeting we didn't have, my kids could care less. She said, don't fool yourself into thinking you're doing these things for the kids. At least be honest about the fact that you're doing it for yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't say, I'm doing this for the kids. I colored my hair for about 4 years because I didn't want my teenage daughters to have a gray-haired mother, and they asked me to quit. See, I was doing it for the kids. So I think sometimes we have to...